From the American College of Cardiology, this is Dr. Deepak Bhatt, Senior Associate Editor for ACC.org. I'm filling in this week for Dr. Kim Eagle, who's on vacation, on Eagle's Eye View, your weekly cardiovascular update from ACC.org. This week, I'm going to be discussing heart failure with preserved ejection fraction, called HFpEF. It used to be called diastolic dysfunction, but if you say that these days, people think you don't know what you're talking about, so I've got to remind myself to keep saying HFpEF and not diastolic dysfunction. Let me start off discussing a review article from the European Heart Journal by Carolyn Lamb et al. It includes Scott Solomon, one of my colleagues here at the Brigham, and I think this is a really nice review of heart failure with preserved ejection fraction. It talks about basic science mechanisms, some of the new genetics. It talks about actual therapies, potential therapies, therapies being studied. So really a very nice overview. Let me go through some of the key points about this. One important point is the role of hypertension in causing HFpEF and the role of antihypertensive therapies in reducing the occurrence of HFpEF. What is not entirely clear, though, is once HFpEF has occurred, does aggressive treatment of hypertension help? And there's some evidence that might be the case, but with RAS blockade in particular, it seems like it's beneficial, though a lot of this benefit does seem to be more at the lower end of the EF spectrum than in patients who have completely normal EF. Nonetheless, tight blood pressure control may be of benefit in patients with HFpEF. The role of rhythm control in patients with HFpEF and atrial fibrillation remains unclear. It seems like an obvious sort of target in those patients, but really we need much more data to support that strategy. Many patients with HFpEF have concomitant coronary artery disease, and observational data have shown that those patients have worse outcomes, and therefore, theoretically, revascularization might be of benefit in a subset of patients with HFpEF and severe coronary artery disease. Once more, further study is really needed. Of course, lots of patients with HFpEF are older, and a lot of them will have coronary artery disease if you look for it, and whether in all cases it's causal or not is what really needs to be determined. The review article also discusses the wireless monitoring of pulmonary artery pressure. This is an approach that has been shown to be useful to reduce heart failure hospitalizations, both in those with reduced and preserved ejection fraction. Actually, before I sat down to do this recording, I literally just put a device in a patient who had heart failure with preserved ejection fraction who kept coming into the hospital repeatedly for heart failure exacerbations, and my heart failure colleagues here referred the patient for implantation of one of those pulmonary artery pressure sensors. So we'll see if that helps keep the patient out of the hospital, but the data certainly suggest that should be the case. It also appears that excess plasma volume is responsible in a proportion of patients with HFpEF for their disease exacerbations and hospitalizations, and therefore diuresis seems to be an important part of the management of HFpEF. And in the future, in those patients with diabetes and maybe even those without diabetes, depending on the results of ongoing trials, SGLT2 inhibitors might also have a role. These drugs promote natriuresis and also lead then to diuresis and also have other favorable effects with respect to reducing heart failure hospitalizations and reducing renal adverse events in trials that have been completed of diabetic patients. So perhaps in those with heart failure with preserved ejection fraction, they may have a particular role. And again, there are a number of studies ongoing to see what SGLT2 inhibitors do in patients with both reduced and preserved ejection fraction in those with diabetes as well as those without diabetes. There are other interesting aspects of this review article, such as a discussion of systemic inflammation and whether treating that might have any role in heart failure with preserved ejection fraction, and to date, there's really no conclusive evidence that's the case. There's also a discussion of some of the new understanding of the biology of heart failure with preserved ejection fraction, in particular our discussion of Titan. This is a gigantic elastic sarcomeric protein, and it appears to be the dominant regulator of myocardial passive tension. So potentially modulation of this protein and related pathways might have a role, if future studies support it, in treating patients with heart failure with preserved ejection fraction. Staying on this theme of heart failure with preserved ejection fraction, a couple of other papers that I want to mention. A study by Obokata et al. In the Journal of the American College of Cardiology examined the relationship between myocardial injury and cardiac reserve in patients with heart failure and preserved ejection fraction. What the authors found was that limitations in LV functional reserve and hemodynamic derangements that develop secondary to such limitations during exercise in HFpEF are correlated with severity of injury as assessed by troponin levels. And this study is insightful in as much as it suggests that elevations in troponin can occur in the absence of ischemia, which I think clinically we've all seen patients with heart failure with preserved ejection fraction or reduced ejection fraction for that matter coming in with elevated troponin levels. They end up getting a coronary angiogram. There's no significant epicardial disease noted. So the study really does seem to go along well with what we observe in clinical practice. And sticking with this theme of troponin release, an article by Weil et al., also in the Journal of the American College of Cardiology, explores whether increases in left ventricular preload can cause troponin release in the absence of ischemia. And they too find that transient elevations of the LVDP leads to troponin release. It also leads to other things such as apoptosis and even in a reversible fashion to stretch-induced stunning of the myocardium in the absence of any ischemia. So again, this is a fascinating study that shows that an increase in preload as may occur in HFpEF can cause troponin release. This troponin release stays up for a day or so, and the study nicely provides an explanation for patients who have hypertensive heart failure or HFpEF who come in and have a troponin elevation but don't have any obvious epicardial coronary artery disease noted on an angiogram. So altogether, these papers provide great information and insight into heart failure with preserved ejection fraction. There seems to be more and more of that coming into the hospital these days, and I think these nice papers help provide some insight into how potentially we can better treat patients with HFpEF. And if you want a nice summary of these different articles in writing, Dr. Raghavendra Balaga has provided excellent journal scans. So if you want more than what's in this podcast, go ahead and read his nice summaries. And if you want even more than that, of course, go to the original papers. Thanks very much for listening to this week's Eagle's Eye View, your weekly cardiovascular update from acc.org. All the topics I discussed today can be found on the American College of Cardiology's website. Please find us there or wherever you get your podcasts. Have a great week.